The Sedra starts off with the mitzvah of Bikurim, bringing the first fruits. And it's the Medrash says, V'hoyo kisovu el ha'oretz, do this mitzvah, asei mitzvah zu, shebizchusa tovo el ha'oretz. Fulfill this mitzvah, and in that merit you'll come into Eretz Yisrael. There's only one problem. They didn't do that mitzvah till they were in Eretz Yisrael, already 7 years settled. It took 7 years to conquer Eretz Yisrael, 7 years to settle it, divide it up, and at that point they started to keep the mitzvah of Bikurim. So how could this mitzvah be the merit that will merit you to come into the land when you didn't do the mitzvah until you were 14 years in the land? So in order to answer that, I want to start with another question, and we'll give maybe one or two answers, but one based on the following. And we'll speak about something to do with Rosh Hashanah also with that. The specialness of the mitzvah of Bikurim is Reishis Kopri Hu Adama, take the first. The Torah gives special importance to all firsts, first fruit, firstborn, first shearings of the wool, first of the dough, right? All these things are firsts, and they're important. Now, why does the Torah say to give the first? The first is not necessarily always the best. I'm a firstborn, so I could believe that the first is the best. But, right, but you're not a firstborn, so you probably don't agree. So, then why the first? Why didn't God say, look, give me a few samples, first, second, third, bring me the best? Why Dafka the first? One of the reasons is that the first sets the pattern and serves as the foundation, the root and the foundation for everything that comes afterwards. And if the root and foundation are perfect, or as close to perfect as they can be, then what you build on that foundation can be strong. But if there's a hairline crack in the foundation, even if the rest of the building is sturdy, it's going to fall down. And if the foundation is strong, even if the rest of the building is weak, it lamaisa will be supported by a good foundation. Same thing with a root. If the root is healthy, the plant can survive. But if there's a small blemish in the root, a blemish that on a leaf would be nothing, but it comes out 1,000 times in the plant. So, therefore, it's important that the first be dedicated to God. And that sets the pattern, the root, and the foundation for everything that comes after. So that's one of the ideas of the Reishis of the beginning, which explains the following halacha. It says in the Shulchan Aruch that even a person who is lenient, I'm not going to go into what the leniencies are, but there's certain things you're allowed to do, but it's not, you know, it's not ideal. But it's okay. Halachically, it's okay, but it's not ideal. So somebody who relies on something like that during the year and does what is okay, but not ideal, during Aseres Yemei Tshuva, from Rosh Hashanah till Yom Kippur, he shouldn't do that. He should do the ideal. Now, on the surface, that seems to be very false. Why? You're being judged during this time, so you want to make a good impression on God. Right? If I don't understand, look, I want to start this new year, I want to try to start doing things more ideal than I did last year. So I'm going to try it out during these 10 days and see if I can continue doing it. That I would understand. But we're talking about a case where you don't plan at all to change. You know you're going to continue doing this thing, it's okay, it's just not ideal the whole year. But for 10 days you're going to put on an act and do only the ideal. It seems very false. It's like you're trying to make an impression on God, you know, when he judges you, and then, you know, Motzei Yom Kippur, you say, tough luck, I'm going back to what I was before, but the judgment's over, so I fooled you. What's the purpose
sometimes
of it?
Lishma.
Yeah, but that's only if you intend, because you want it to become Lishma. But you know for sure that you're not, you don't want to change. You don't want to change it, right? One of the examples is something baked by a non-Jewish baker that's kosher. It has hashgacha. There's a mashgiach making sure all the ingredients are okay. but the baking is done by a non-Jewish baker, is okay to eat. As long as it has to be commercial, and it has to be that there's a mashgiach. But if the baking is done by a non-Jewish baker, you're allowed to eat it. If there's no similar quality baked goods baked by Jews, or it's cheaper or something like that, then you're allowed to eat it. But it's not ideal. So it says, even somebody who the whole year eats that kind of thing, in America it's Entenmann's cakes, right? Drake's cakes have a Hechsher, they have an OU, but they're not baked by Jews. It's baked by Goyim. The Mashgiach doesn't even turn on the fire. It's all totally done by non-Jews. So that's called pas palter. It's not bread baked by an individual Goy, that's osur to eat. It's baked by a commercial Goy, it's okay. By bread, by cake. And it's not okay by cooked things, but by bread and cake it's okay. But it's not ideal. So it says whoever eats Entenmann's cakes during the year shouldn't eat the Maaseres Yemei Teshuva. Okay. So here's a person, he's already ordered his order of Entenmann's cakes to break his fast Yom Kippur. He doesn't plan to continue this, but he'll hold off till Yom Kippur. So what's the purpose of it? One of the ideas is this idea. Rosh Hashanah till Yom Kippur is called Reishis Hashanah. It's the beginning of the year, it's the foundation of the year. And therefore, if somebody is building a house, and he can't afford to use materials that are extra special for the whole house, too expensive, but he buys extra special materials for the foundation, and he uses grade B materials for the walls, is he a hypocrite? No, makes sense. Because you want the foundation to be as perfect as possible, because the whole building depends on that. Same thing over here. You want the beginning of the year to be as perfect as possible, so the rest of the year that you build on it, even if it's not as perfect as that, but it's based on a firm base and a firm root. That's the idea. So therefore, this mitzvah is the reishis, bringing the first fruit. It sets the foundation for everything that comes afterwards. But it also tells me the following. It says that I have to give thanks to God for these first fruits. Why is that special? Because God didn't give me these first fruits. I could look at it differently. I planted these things. I conquered this land. I fought. I tilled the soil. I planted. I fertilized. I harvested. What do you mean God gave me this fruit? I conquered this land on my own and I made this fruit. The answer is, you don't do anything. Right? You conquered the land because God gave you the power to conquer it. And you planted these things that God gave you the power and the wherewithal to plant. And God made sure you could plant everything in the world. There won't be rain. There'll be all kinds of diseases. You won't have any fruit. So ultimately, you did your part, but God is the one who gave you the fruit. Now, in order to come to that realization and do this mitzvah, you're going to have to think from the very time that you are conquering the land, fighting the wars, dividing it up, think about this mitzvah. That one day I'm going to have to come and bring my first fruit and say, God, I thank you for giving it to me. Now, if I conquer the land and think that I'm the one who did it, and I till the soil and think I'm the one who did it, I'll never be able to say that with any truth, with any honesty. So therefore, that's what it says. Do this mitzvah, meaning prepare yourself to do this mitzvah properly. Meaning, when you conquer the land, and when you're tilled the soil, and everything, all those 14 years that you are preparing for this mitzvah of the first fruit, prepare yourself, do it in a way that you can say honestly that you're bringing what God gave you, and then you have a schar to come to yourself. You understand that you're not conquering it, and you're not, it's God is giving it to you. You just have to do your part, then that's what being able to do this mitzvah means, then you'll get the land. Okay. Next. It says, V'hoya ki savo el haaretz. The word V'hoya always constitutes simcha. As a prior to Vayahi, Vay, always constitutes something that's sorrow. Vayahi bimei Achashverosh, we know what happened after that, right? All the Vayahis, Vayahi bimei, there were tzoras. V'hoya is simcha. Okay? An idea that I like to say, it could be that other people say it, but I think could be like this. The word Vayehi takes the future and changes it into the past. Okay, the Vav. Vayehi. And it was. But Yehi is for the future. When you see the whole picture, when you see the future, then everything's for the good. When you can't see the future, you just see what's in front of you, then you can see things can be bad. Right? It's an interesting story. Very simple, no gigantic big deal, but it taught me that lesson last week. My daughter, one of the parts of her food processor broke, and she needed a new one. And she had gone to a store in Yerushalayim, and they had it, but she didn't have the money with her. She couldn't buy it. So she asked me to pick it up for her. So I went to the store, and she needs it. She's the one who sells these challahs and whatever. She really needs it. So that's because she got the recipe from my wife. She has good training. I love my daughter very much, but give the credit where it's good. Right. Okay. That's good to hear that they're low, not that they're high. Okay. In any case, so she asked me to pick up the piece for her. So I went to the store and he says, I don't have it anymore. I said, but you had it. He said, no, I sold it. So that's what we're in business, to sell these things. He said, I don't have it. He said, I could order it in 2 weeks or whatever. So I said, no, she needs it. She needs it right away. No, he sold me. Go to another store right in the neighborhood. Maybe they have it. I went to them. They don't have it. Then I went. They sent me to another store on the other side of Yerushalayim. So I went there. They don't have it. I went. They sent me to another store nearby. They don't have it. 4 stores already I've been in. Nobody has it. I really was upset. Finally, they sent me to a 5th place. I go to this 5th place, and there's a kid working there. He says, I don't see it. We don't have it. But wait till the Bala boss comes. The Bala boss comes. This piece costs about 250 shekel. The Bala boss comes in, and he says, I don't have the piece, but let me look at it. He looks at it, and he says, I said, could you fix it? He said, I don't know. Let's see. Starts fooling around with the thing, with a screwdriver, whatever, takes it apart. We tried every way of putting this thing back on. It looked like it was easy to put back on. He takes the thing apart, puts on one piece, then puts the other piece on top of that. Perfect. I said, how much do I owe you? He said, nothing. He said, I'm doing it. I didn't spend anything. And I said, but your time, your expertise, that's what you're in business for. So I'd like to pay you. He said, look, if I come to your house, you tell me what to do. In my store, I tell you what to do. I told you, you're not paying me. Right? I did a chesed. So this is a very nice Sephardi man. He said, what's it called? I did a chesed. Didn't cost me anything. And you're not going to take that away from me. So it's my store. You do what I tell you. And so if I had found the thing in any one of those 4 stores, it would have cost me 250 shekel. Because the Rabban Shalom decided he doesn't want my daughter to pay that money. She wouldn't have paid it anyway. She didn't want her father to pay the money, right? So he decided that he's going to make all these people not have it so I can get finally to the guy who's going to fix it for free. So sometimes things look, you know, bad, and they turn out good. Most of the time you hear these stories, they're really, you know, something earth-shattering. But in small things sometimes you see that what you thought was bad and get really frustrated, and then the Maaseh, you see the Rabban Shalom means it for the good. I want you to go to the guy who knows how to fix it. None of these people, everybody said it's impossible to fix. You have to get a new one. And finally go to the guy who can easily know what he's doing. And if I would have gotten it in any one of those other places, it would have cost me 250 shekel, which was totally unnecessary. So I saw in the end the Rabban Shalom did me a favor. Right, he didn't let anybody have it and directed me dafka to the 5th place where the guy fixed it. Okay, so in any case, so therefore, the vahaya is the opposite. Vahaya is, haya is past, but the vav makes it into the future. If you could take the past and put it into the perspective of the future, everything's simcha, everything's happy. It's when you can't see the future, when you only see the present, or you take the future and put it back into the past, then it could be tzaris. That's why V'hoya is Simcha and V'yehi is Tzoras. So the Torah starts, V'hoya kisav al art. So we learn from that, says the Orach Chaim HaKadosh, that a person has to fulfill the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael b'Simcha. You have to be happy about living in Eretz Yisrael. You have to be happy. Now, sometimes that's very difficult, because it says that Eretz Yisrael is niknes b'yisurim. Eretz Yisrael is acquired with tzaras. How can you be happy? But I think, first of all, there's a tremendous lesson over here. The mitzvah is yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Yishuv Eretz Yisrael means settling the land, but it also means to be settled in the land. Therefore, if you don't have a parnasa here, you can't be settled. If you have emotional problems with what's going on, you can't be settled. In order to fulfill the mitzvah of settling the land, you have to live here and be settled. For that, you have to be happy. Being happy means you're settled. So in order to fulfill the mitzvah, you have to be happy. But even though there are yisurim, and there are definitely trials and tribulations that are associated with living in Eretz Yisrael, I'll tell you a story. I don't know if I've told this story here in the past or recently or whatever, but it brought me to the realization of how you have to look to feel settled here and to have that simcha. It was way back when I first came to Eretz Yisrael. We came to live here, but we came, you know, with one foot still in Chutzlah. We didn't sell our house. I brought all my furniture and all my 20,000 svarim, so if we had to go back, it wouldn't be easy, because if it was easy, then the smallest thing would send us back, but it would be possible. I didn't sell my house, I didn't burn my bridges, and my shul told me they're holding my job, right, just in case I want to come back. They're not going to hire anybody for 6 months, and they were sure in 6 months I would say I'm coming back. Mm-hmm. So, okay. So, during that first year, which was like, you know, more or less a trial time, I had given a shiur in Tel Aviv. I had my van then, my transit, and I gave a shiur in Tel Aviv, and I finished about 10:30, 11 o'clock, and I was coming back to Matityo. Now, you have to understand, at that time, there was no Chashmonayim. There was nothing here. Zero. There were no buses. There was one bus a day to Lod, the city, which nobody ever went to, because nobody wanted to go to Lod. That was it. There was nothing here. So I pull into a gas station, because my gas tank is almost empty. I'll never get back to Matityo on what I had. So I pulled in a gas station to get some gas to go home. And I'm waiting and waiting, and nobody comes to give me gas. So I figured maybe it's self-service, which didn't exist at the time. So I get out of my car, take off the gas thing, and ready to put it into my car. And somebody runs out of the office, waving his hands, "Get away from there." So I said, "What's the problem?" He said, "We're on strike. Didn't you hear? Don't you listen to the radio?" I said, "Actually not." He said, "We're on strike. All the gas stations are on strike. It's part of the Histadrut. We're on strike." I said, "Well, I got to get home." He said, "Take a cab." He said, "No, take a bus." I said, "There are no buses to Matityo in the daytime, let alone 11 o'clock at night." He said, "So take a cab." I said, "If I take a cab, that's half my year's salary to get back to Matityo now." So I said, "Do me a favor." I said, "Sell me enough gas just to get home. A few liters, I'll pay you double, triple what it is. You'll have the extra money, I'll get home." He says, "I can't do that." I said, "Why not?" He said, "Because maybe you're a spy for the Histadrut, undercover agent, and if I sell you gas, I'll lose my license." I told him, "Look, do I look like a undercover agent for the Histadrut?" He said, "You could never tell." He said, so he wasn't taking any chances. So I said, "Well, what do you suggest I do? I can't get home without the gas. There's no way. What do you expect?" He said, "Look, at 6 o'clock in the morning, I can sell you gas." I said, "How do you know the strike's going to be over at 6 o'clock? He said, "That's when it's over." I said, "You mean I have an idea when the strike is going to be?" "Yeah, that's how we do it over here. 6 o'clock, the strike's over, I can sell you gas." So I said, "What am I supposed to do till 6 o'clock? He said, "You could stay here in the gas station, sleep here. At 6 o'clock in the morning, I'll sell you gas, you go home." So first I went looking for, there was no cell phones then. This was like 27 years ago. So I went looking for a payphone to call my wife and try to convince her that I'm sleeping in a gas station. Right? That in itself was a misibah, like, you know. So I called my wife and I told her, "Look, there was a phone nearby, yeah, and it worked. I put in my asimonim, and I told her, "Look, you'll never believe this, but it's true. Right? I am stuck in a gas station, and I'm going to be sleeping here till 6 o'clock in the morning. So I'll see you in the morning." I went back to the gas station. I said, okay, where can I go to sleep? He said, in your car. He said, you're welcome to put your car in the gas station, but you can sleep in your car. So I, it was about 11:30 now, and I started to go to sleep. And I said to myself, that's it. This is it. I never slept in a gas station in America in my life. I am never going to sleep in a gas station ever again. Tomorrow morning, I take my family to the American Embassy and ask for asylum, and we go home. This is it, right? There's no way that I'm staying in this country another minute, right? I never had to sleep in a gas station before in my life, and I'm not going to do it again, and this is absurd. This is like the straw that broke the camel's back. Finished. I must have fallen asleep, because next thing I knew, it was 3 o'clock in the morning. I woke up, and I was a little bit more calm. And I said to myself, I remember sitting in the car, I said to myself the following. Okay, let's be rational about this. Okay, is the reason you moved to Israel because you'd never have to sleep in a gas station? Right? You got together with the family, you said, okay, if we never have to sleep in a gas station, we're moving to Israel. Obviously, right, there were many other good reasons why we decided to come to live in Eretz Israel. Right? And I said to myself, is one night in a gas station going to destroy all those reasons? At that point, there was nothing that ever could convince me to go back to Chutz Lartz. That was, I convinced myself, they're going to be difficult times, even absurd times, but if you remember that there was a reason why you came here, then even those difficult times or whatever aren't going to erase it most of the time. And I think from that point on, I knew that that's it, I'm here. And my wife was convinced way before that. She was the tzaddikus who brought us here. But she always knew that if it didn't work out, she would get the blame. But in any case, but that was it. That was the turning point. So that's the hoya. In order to mekayim the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, you have to be miyushav. You have to be settled. And in order to be settled, you have to be happy. And even though there's plenty of very, sometimes very not comfortable moments here, and sometimes comically not comfortable moments, and sometimes things in between, and we all know that, right? Still, you can be happy if you take into consideration what the benefits of living here, what the milas are, what any of our ancestors would have done to sacrifice, to be able to live in Eretz Yisrael throughout the generations when it was almost impossible to do. And many of them did almost the impossible. They came here by boat, and they dealt with what's it called, with plagues and sickness and earthquakes. And they still feel happy to live here. We don't have to do that, Baruch Hashem. Get on a plane, you're here, what's it called? The worst could be, so you won't get some, you know, you're living a lower standard of living. But nobody's starving like they did then. And still, they came. So the Yetzer Hara is like that. When you can't come, the Yetzer Hara doesn't take away the desire, just makes it you can't come. And when you can come, he takes away the desire. So if you have that outlook, then you can be happy even with the Yisur, even with the difficulties. It's not easy, right? I can empathize, but it's possible. Okay, next. It says that you should go to the Kohen who lives in your time. So the Gemara says, can you go to a Kohen who doesn't live in your time? What does it have to say? Right? It comes to tell me that you should not complain about, oh, I wish I could go to the Kohen, you know, but Nebuch have to go to this Kohen. It says the same thing by a judge. You should go to the judge who's in your time, meaning that you should be happy with the judge in your time and not say, oh, he's not like the guy who was last generation or whatever. Now, normally we understand that to mean you're stuck, so accept it. Right? Really, you could have gone to a real great rabbi who lived two generations ago, but the Vilna Gaon's no longer here. So you have to be satisfied with the rabbi in your generation. Same thing with the Kohen. Says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, but if somehow you could resurrect the Vilna Gaon, that would be ideal. He says, no. What it says you have to go to the Kohen or the Shofet in your generation is not Nebuch, you know, because there's no other choice. It's telling you the following. Torah is not something that is static and equal the same for everybody. Two people can come to a Gadol and ask the same exact question. And one will get one answer and one will get a different answer completely, if he's really a Gadol. Because the circumstances of one, I'll give you a simple, very absurd case, but it's much deeper than this. Two people come and ask about a chicken, if it's kosher or not. Now the halacha is that the problem with the chicken, and they both have the same problem, same exact problem with each of their chickens. Same thing is wrong. Now the halacha is that under normal circumstances, the chicken's not kosher. But if it involves a very big loss for the person, then there are other opinions that say it's okay, and you can rely on those minority opinions, or it's a big loss. One of the guys is rich, brings a chicken. For him, it's not a big loss. So the rabbi says, sorry, it's not kosher. The other guy is a pauper. This is his week's meal. If he loses the chicken, he can't get another one. So there are opinions, minority opinions say it's okay. For him, the rabbi says it's kosher. Same question. Two different people, two different circumstances, two different answers. Memela, Torah always depends on time, place, on circumstances. It's not the same for every generation or every person. Generations are different. The Michtam Eliyahu, I'll give you an example. The Michtam Eliyahu says that every generation has its Yetzer Hara, its specific, what's the weakness of that generation. And the way to fight it is to fight fire with fire. You fight it on his own ground. Example, in the Rambam's time, the Yetzer Hara was Greek philosophy, Aristotle. People thought that Aristotle was the last word in truth, and whatever Aristotle said was true. And if Aristotle contradicted the Torah was wrong. So the Rambam, how did he fight that? It was like science today, right? Science is a religion. Aristotle, Greek philosophy, was a religion. And it surpassed Torah. So what did the Rambam do? He wrote the Guide to the Perplexed, Morin Avuchim, and he showed that where Aristotle was right, he didn't contradict the Torah, and where he contradicted the Torah, he's wrong. So he fought it with Greek philosophy. Now, if you don't think that things change, then today I have a perfect solution to bring back all the estranged kids from Torah. Go to Kikar Tzion, to the pub, take out a Mora Nevuchim, and say, look, I know why you kids are estranged, because you think that Aristotle is the final word in truth. So I'm going to read you some choice passages from the Guide to the Perplexed and bring you all back to Torah. You know how many kids you will bring back like that? None. You know why? Because the Yetzer Hara of this generation is not Greek philosophy. Right? They don't even know who Aristotle is. They probably think he's a rock star. The deepest thought, right, you'll excuse me, of this generation, right, is do I want ketchup or mustard on my hamburger? And even that's like, you know, too hard to deal with. They're not into philosophy, not into deep thought. That's not exactly what's pulling them away from Torah. It's a lot of other things, but it's not that. So Torah doesn't change, but people change. And times change. And therefore you have to approach the Torah differently. Every day needs to be reassessed to see how to deal, how to package the Torah properly, how to deal with it properly, how to relate to it. It's the packaging, the relation. It's not the Torah that changed, but how do you relate to it? So you can't go, even if you could resurrect somebody from a different generation, you couldn't go to them with your shailas, because they don't understand your generation, your specific situation. That's why asking rabbis, people called me today, I got a call from somebody, once they asked me a question from Bnei Brak. I said, why are you calling me? I said, do you know me? No, I heard of you. I said, don't you have a rabbi that knows you, that can see face to face, who knows you, you belong to his kehila, and if you don't, you have to get somebody like that. I'm willing to answer your question now, but you have to get a rabbi who knows you. I can't answer a question unless I know who you are, right, what your circumstances are. You can't just give generic answers. That's why you can't, you know, have a computer answer shailas. The computer knows the information, but it doesn't know how to relate it to the person it's speaking to. And that's the major part of answering, knowing the circumstances. So you have to know who you're talking to, what you're talking about. I remember in Miami, I don't know if you were there at the time, But we wanted to have a night of strengthening observance of Shabbos in the community. And there was another shul in the area, Rabbi Bidnick Shul, and myself and Rabbi Bidnick, we got together and we decided we're going to bring in somebody from the outside because that's the major attraction. You know, the rabbi's in town, people get used to them. But somebody from the outside, that's like, you know, special, right? So we're going to bring in a rabbinic figure from out of the community, from up north. And he's a name, he was a famous rabbi, and we're going to make him the main speaker. People will come, and he's going to speak about strengthening Shabbos. Now, the problems in our community were we had a lot of elderly people who were retired, who never really went and had a yeshiva education. They never really learned the details of the laws of Shabbos. They were Shomer Shabbos because their parents were Shomer Shabbos. But they knew too much about Shabbos, so a lot of them carried their handkerchiefs. There wasn't an Erev at the time. They carried their handkerchiefs in their pocket or their medicines. And we needed somebody to tell them that they should start learning the laws of Shabbos and not just keep Shabbos because that's the way I did it last week or whatever. So that's what we wanted, basically. We thought that we were going to get from this person. So he came from a northern community. I'm not going to mention who he is or even give you a hint where he came from because he's no longer alive, and what I'm going to tell you is not nice about him. So he gets up. He had about 45 minutes to speak. 20 minutes, without exaggeration, he speaks about the following major problem of Shabbos, which may have been the major problem in his community, but it had no connection to the people he was talking to. What was the problem? He noticed that Erev Shabbos, many people unscrew some of the bulbs in their chandeliers. So when Shabbos comes, they don't have to waste the electricity of all these extra bulbs, and they just have a minimal of bulbs in the chandelier, which he thinks is a terrible affront to the honor of Shabbos, of trying to save some money and not having the full power of candlelight, candle power of the chandeliers. Now, Mike knows, right, and Yitzi knows, that in Miami, people never didn't have any chandeliers. I think the people didn't even know what a chandelier was.
Not at that time.
Right, not at that time. Now, yeah, now it's different because they transferred from where they have them to Miami. But the people in Miami at the time were very simple people. They did not have chandeliers. That was not the major problem of Shabbos, unscrewing the bowls of the chandelier before Shabbos. It may have been a problem unscrewing the bowl on Shabbos. But before Shabbos was not the problem in Miami. And here's a guy, he's talking to a group about things of no connection to them. I learned from that if I ever am asked, at that time I wasn't sure I was going to be asked, now I know I am, right? Ever asked to speak anywhere out of my community, I will speak to the rabbis first of the community and ask, what should I say? What shouldn't I say? What's the problems of the community? Not get up there and make a fool out of myself and speak about something that has no connection to the community I'm speaking to. So you have to know how to adapt the Torah to the time and place and circumstances. Therefore, you can only go to the shofet, to the judge in your time. Same thing with the Kohen. You need somebody who can relate emotionally to you. You have to go to a Kohen who knows your generation. Because if he doesn't, he's on a different wavelength. He's not the same thing. Right? In the yeshivas, in the beginning of when the yeshivas came from Europe, there were a lot of European gedolim who were fine, and they dealt with European bachrim great, but American bachrim they couldn't relate to. They couldn't emotionally, they didn't know who they were talking to. These are not European bachrim, these are American bachrim. And it's up until the time that they started producing American Rosh Yeshivas who understood. My son-in-law is the mashgiach in our yeshiva. He told me once, he said, you should know the generation gap between me as a young guy. He said, and these guys, there's only 10 years between us. It's like two generations. It's a different world. The world that I grew up in and the world these kids are growing up in, I'm two generations removed. I'm only 10 years removed from them, two generations removed. And you, he said, you're 10 generations removed from these kids. You have no idea what their world is like. You're not different from outer space compared to these people. So you have to know who you're talking to. So you can't go to the Kohen of some other generation, not just because you can't do it, because it's not the proper thing. You have to go to someone who knows you emotionally, he knows the circumstances, and he knows to paskin shailas that way, and to deal with you emotionally. That's how you have to go. Can't go to somebody, that's what the Torah is telling me. It's not telling me that Nebuch, too bad you can't go to somebody greater. Even somebody greater, but it's a different generation, it's not for you. You should know that you have to go to somebody that can relate to your situation.